You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon is easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 153 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Catwoman Annual Number 1, Detective Comics Annual Number 2, Doomsday Clock Number 10, Heroes in Crisis Number 9, Superman Leviathan Rising Special Number 1, and Swamp Thing Season 1 Episode 2, Worlds Apart. But before we get into that, let's get into some DC news. All right, Cletus, coming up first with DC news. Okay, I'm going to butcher this name, so I'm just going to say that up front because I don't know how to pronounce this. Juami Colette Sierra is eyed to direct DC's Black Adam, starring Dwayne Johnson. Sources tell Variety that Colette Sierra is in negotiations to direct the Black Adam movie. I don't know this director. Do you?
I don't think so. Off the top of my head, I don't.
I don't know, but I'm glad to see they're moving forward with Black Adam, and I'm sure that has to do with the success of Shazam.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in theory, they were always making it, but I definitely question if Shazam had bombed, I don't think Black Adam gets made.
I have to tend to agree with you there. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Matt Reeves states that the Batman will not rehash the Batman's origin story. It will focus on Bruce Wayne becoming a genius detective. So, and we kind of talked about that last episode, if, you know, we didn't want to see Batman's origin story again. So, I'm guessing other people had some concerns about that since he came out and stated it. Unless he's listening to the show.
Totally.
So, you know, that was good to hear, because we definitely don't need his origin story again.
No, we really do not. I don't even think it's not even a matter of, like, I don't know what other interesting spin you could put on it without drastically changing it, and then that would just upset everybody.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some sort of flashback to it, or hint of it, or mention of it, but, you know, we don't need to see it again. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. A movie poster was released for Wonder Woman 1984, in which Diana donned a new costume. So, Cletus, what'd you think of the new costume?
The funniest thing I read about that poster was they were trying to see how many W's they could possibly fit onto the poster. I don't really have a thought about the costume because I question how, like, is she really going to wear that for that long in the movie? Is that actually the main costume? Probably not. What is the actual color of it? Because there's a very stylized poster. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, I thought the poster looked really cool. I liked the poster. However, I don't expect to see her wearing that for even a large portion of the movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I don't know. My only takeaway from it was that I thought it was a really cool poster. I would be very surprised if that's a major costume in the movie.
All right. For me, it was meh. I wasn't that excited about that poster. I mean, the poster was okay, but I wasn't really that impressed with it. Maybe I'll be more impressed with that costume when I see the first trailer and it's in it. If it's in it, I might get more excited about it then, but I wasn't that excited about it. And I did do a little research on it, and it is, that costume is taken from the comics. And it was a golden costume that kind of heightened her powers. But I don't know much more than that about it. So it is from the comics. So that's kind of cool. And I tend to agree with you. I don't think we'll see it for the whole movie. I think it's going to be for probably towards the end of the movie. She's going to don this costume, you know, to use battling Cheetah. So that's what I'm guessing. And apparently you have no more to say about it.
I think, yeah, I mean, I agree. That's probably, like I said, I'm not so sure that costume's going to be a major plot point of the movie. I feel like it just made a cool poster. But I could be wrong.
So I think it's going to play a part in it towards the end of the movie. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I could see that.
All right, let's move on to other DC news. Joseph David Jones, who played Connor Hawke on Arrow, is up to a season regular for the final season.
All right. I was surprised.
I know, I was too. I was like, okay. I wonder if he's going to play some sort of part in the crossover.
I'm almost wondering if he's going to end up teaming up with Oliver and whatever other worlds thing stuff that he's doing. I hope it's not, because they're going to focus on the flash forwards more, because I really don't want to watch that. I'm not going to lie. Like, in the final season of Arrow, the last thing I want is more of that flash forward.
I don't know. I don't see them focusing on the flash forward that much. So I tend to agree with you that I think Connor Hawke is going to be joining Oliver in his travels with the Monitor, too. I think what Oliver's role is going to be in the last season is gathering people up for Crisis on Infinite Earths.
He's basically going to be Harbinger.
So that's what I think his role is going to be. So, and I think that's going to be really interesting if that's the take they're going to do. If they're going to do more flash forwards, not that interested in it. But we haven't heard about anybody else being up to a season regular either.
Right. Because I don't think anybody else in those Flash Fours were regulars. I think they were all guest stars, I believe. So, like we're saying, I think it's more likely that he teams up with Oliver. I hope. I'm also, that's wishful thinking, because because if he's a season regular and it's because of the Flash Forwards, that means that they're going to be focusing on them a lot. And even people that were huge fans of the Flash Forward, I don't think they could argue that that's what the last season should be.
Yeah. All right. And in other DC news, Swamp Thing Season 2 is canceled at DC Universe. What a bummer.
This was not only surprising to us, but apparently surprising to a lot of people that were actually involved in the show.
I even saw a post from James Wan. He was surprised by it himself.
I'm really curious what the actual story with this is. So there has been a lot of different things that have gone around. Like, maybe this was the first step towards DC getting absorbed into the overall Warner Brothers Time Warner streaming service thing, which, I mean, I get why they would do it, as long as DC Universe stayed intact, you know what I mean, as long as it was like a section of that, I guess. But that doesn't totally explain it, and it's not the quality. I mean, we'll get into the second episode in this. The pilot was pretty good. I mean, the pilot did not blow me away. The second episode, I thought, was an improvement. Like, I was like, oh, I'm actually starting to dig this show a little more. So it's not the quality. And all of the reviews I've read have been pretty favorable overall for it. So, yeah, it's got to be something else. It's got to be tied to when they first cut the show down. Originally, it was supposed to be 13, I think, episodes, and they cut it to 10, and the showrunners were all very upset about that, which is fair. And yeah, and so now they cancel it. There's something else, and I'm really curious what that something else was.
Yeah, and the thing that's got me worried is we haven't heard anything about Titans Season 2, and we haven't heard anything about Doom Patrol Season 2 yet.
Well, haven't they already said that Titans Season 2 is happening? I mean, because they cast Batman.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did say that, but I haven't heard anything further about it. Have you? Not that I can remember.
No, but I didn't necessarily take that as they weren't doing anything. I felt that they were. I thought they were just like, you know, in the lull before starting to film the show.
Okay, that could very well be, but still, I would think they would have said something about Doom Patrol by now.
And they yeah, I have to agree. It's weird that they. I mean, I guess. Maybe they're operating on the assumption that you just like they just assume people know that it's getting a second season, because like I don't know, does Netflix always announce that another show is getting a season? I feel like you only hear if they stop making a show.
Well, sometimes I do hear that they're renewed a season or they got a show coming.
Well, but like when that's when it's actually done. I feel like. Again, I could be wrong. I'm not super well informed on this, but I feel like I don't hear, like I don't remember them ever saying Daredevil season two was picked up. It was just assumed that it was getting a second season, and then when news came out about it, it was because they were filming it.
Well, we knew they were getting Stranger Things 3 for a while.
Right. So I don't know. I'm trying to think optimistically here. I feel like maybe that just the assumption, like, of course we're doing Doom Patrol Season 2. Why wouldn't we? And it's because it's our own service. We don't need to announce that we're picking it up because it's our own show. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't like not hearing anything.
I agree. I'd rather have heard confirmation that we're getting a second season of Doom Patrol, but at least we have gotten not a cancellation note. That would have been terrible.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Do you enjoy TV shows, movies, video games, comics, or novels? Do you enjoy listening to people discuss geeky topics without getting bent out of shape when they disagree? If you do, then the 42 Cast is right for you. We're a podcast with a rotating cast of guests that discusses a new topic every week. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Google Play, or 42cast.com. You can also support us and the entire ESO Network by going to patreon.com/ESO Network. That's the 42 Cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
Alright, let's talk Catwoman Annual Number 1. Three dead women, conflicting stories, unreliable witnesses, and Selina Kyle is at the center of it all.
This was good. This was I have gone on record multiple times on this podcast being very lukewarm towards annuals. This one was really good. This was a solid issue of Catwoman.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it myself, and I was glad it was one story and not several stories like we get sometimes.
My only complaint with this is that I don't think it completely answered its own mystery. I mean, like, we figure out sort of who did it, but not... I felt like it left some of the why out. I thought that was a little odd. I don't know if maybe they're planning on doing more with this story later. Kind of like what we got with Batman. Detective Comics is its own story, but it's also clearly setting up a future arc. I'm almost wondering if this is the same thing, because I don't know about you, but like, we know the basic gist of the story at the end, but I still felt like there were some important questions that weren't answered, at least for me.
Yeah, because one of the things I was left unclear about was, did Immortal Man die?
Yeah, did he die? Why exactly did he, was he partnered with the girl? Like, it was very clear that that girl had, you know, had either killed the girls or watched and teamed up with Immortal Man. It's just, I don't know. It was, yeah, I don't know. I was, that part in particular, what exactly the girl's role was that ended up being the traitor.
Yeah.
And then, but then also why? Like, why was Immortal Man continuing to partner with her? Like, what was the, why? What was the draw? What was the benefit?
Right. That's what I was wondering. I was wondering what the relationship was, because she obviously knew him. In my notes, I have her name. Her name's Amanda. So Catwoman invited Chessa off the street. Chessa was kind of a stray. She brought her in, and then she had a party and had all these girls over. And then for whatever reason, Catwoman decided she was going to train them. I think it was a kind of a way to get her mind off of Bruce, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
So she takes these strays in. And then, you know, she trains them for a while, and then they want to do their big score on their own. Where they got the idea? The other thing I didn't understand is where they got the idea to go after that sword. Was it Amanda's idea? Did she have this plan for some reason? What was her tie to the Immortal Man? It was all strange, because they never explained it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I didn't get it.
And at first, I thought that dude was Vandal Savage at first. And then when we found out it was Immortal Man, I had to kind of look him up to see who the heck he was. He's supposed to be a hero, not a villain. So I'm wondering what's going on. And then we get the fact that Selina contacted Lois, and Superman shows up at the end. And Superman's kind of acting like he's not a villain. You know what I mean? So why he would murder some girls doesn't quite make sense to me. And I'm wondering if you're right and they're going to set up something for a future story, but I wish they had explained it just a little more.
Yeah, it was just a little, like, I liked this story a lot, but it was definitely left a little cold with the ending, because Catwoman poses the question of, normally he would do this, this, and this, unless, and if she doesn't answer that question, it was like, but what? What's the unless?
Another thing I really liked in this story is I liked the fact that Selina did contact Lois. Even though she was kind of hesitant to, I'm glad she kind of reached back out to Lois, because I like that Lois and Clark and Bruce and Selina connection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Couples, friends. And you and I have both said it before. We think Bruce and Selina are going to get back together at some point. Of course, we got the Batman Catwoman comic coming out later this year, so that's kind of a hint at that. But I like that dynamic a lot, and I was glad to see that here in this issue. But yeah, overall, this was I thought this was a great issue.
I frankly was more interested in this story than I am in the current story arc for Catwoman.
I'm laughing because I agree with you. So, which I think they said at the end of this issue that we were going back to the final. We were getting back to that story. I thought they said something about it being the final one, but I'm not sure.
Well, they definitely say that for Detective Comics. So I don't know if they also said it in Catwoman. I can't remember, but I know for sure that return for the finale of Arkham Knight was definitely at the end of the Detective Comics annual.
Okay. Or maybe I'm remembering that one. I can't remember.
Well, that's why. I don't know.
All right. Well, that's a good segue. Let's move on to our next issue for this week, Detective Comics Annual Number 2. So this issue calls back to a classic villain, the Reaper, which made his first appearance in Detective Comics Number 575 in June 1987. And this was close to when I started collecting comics. So I thumbed through my issues to see if I actually had it, and I didn't have this one. I found I had issue 573, which was a Mad Hatter issue in which Jason Todd gets shot at the end of. And then I also had issue number 574, which Leslie Tompkins patches them back together and Batman reminisces about his origin. But the very next issue should have been that story, and I didn't have it. I looked through and it looked like the next one in my collection was 602. I was like, no! Which was a Mud Pack story. So I was very close to getting it. This is probably when I was getting a little bit of money and getting comics, and then didn't get back to it for a little while because I didn't have money. You know how that is when you're in junior high.
Yeah, I was actually curious when I was reading it. I was like, I wonder if Drew has comics of this guy.
No, I looked. But I have to say, I really like this annual. Number one, it was just one story as opposed to several stories, kind of like I said about the Catwoman one. Plus, it felt old school. I love that Bruce and Alfred had great moments and were acting like a team. I love the Batman and Commissioner Gordon partnership, friendship that was going on, because it seems like it's been a little bit since we've seen that. We got to see Bruce Wayne being the playboy, which he used for further purposes of his goals as Batman. I always liked that. I also liked the fact that the villain tied back to his earlier years. And it was also kind of refreshing that we didn't get a tie back to his parents' death, because we seem to revisit that a lot also.
The one thing I was honestly surprised by in this, and I will admit, I have not read the original stories with the Reaper. Everything to me seemed to be pointing towards it having to do with the daughter. And then there was like, nope, surprise, it's the son that we made up just now. I don't know, I felt a little lame, to be honest with you.
They're just trying to throw you off. Yeah, I could almost guarantee if you went back to that original one, I doubt if it has the son in it.
Well, I don't think it does. I feel like without explicitly saying it, I feel like the comic almost outright is like, yeah, we totally just made this character up right now.
I'd put money on it, so that they just created him.
But like, I don't know. That just seems, I don't know. It's fine. I mean, I was very interested in this story, and I think it's really cool the kind of story that they're telling with this, where it's almost like an evil Batman Inc.
Yeah.
That's really cool, but it was just like, you already have an established character who could have a vendetta. Why? Like, why not have it be her? Why can't it be, why does it have to be a new guy?
I don't know.
I also thought maybe it was going to be that businesswoman too, because like, why would you focus so heavily on her as a character? I still think she's going to have something to do with that story, because she was in too much of the comic.
Yeah, she was in quite a bit of the comic.
That's one, I have to say, that's one downside to Batman comics, is when you pull in some character who's never really been in the comic before, and they focus on her just as a normal person. You're like, well, obviously they're up to something else, because we would never see them in the comic otherwise.
Yeah,
it was the same thing with Hush. Have you read Hush?
Oh yes, more than once.
You know what I mean? When his childhood friend shows back up, I mean, I feel like it. Most people reading that, at some point, we're pretty sure that he was Hush, because he was the only new person in the story.
Yep.
It is one flaw, I think. I mean, I understand why. You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to read about Bruce Wayne's business friend that he sees once every 3 months.
No, they don't.
But like, Lucius Fox is the only guy I can think of that is only tangentially related to Batman, but still pops up as a civilian.
Yep. Okay. I did have one nitpick about this issue, and that was the two different artist styles. It's a minor complaint, but it did kind of throw me, because you could tell it was totally different.
I'm having a private party over here now, celebrating. I have been on this train for the entire time we've done this podcast, man. I've always been like, I hate inconsistency in art, and I you're finally agreeing with me.
Well, it was quite noticeable this issue.
It's more noticeable in Leviathan.
Okay. Well, we know what you're going to be talking about when we get to that issue.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, in the. But yes, I agree with you. I totally agree. I don't even know. I'm at a loss for words. I was so unprepared for this moment. I'm thrilled. No, I seriously. Thank you. Inconsistency in art, DC. Just let one artist finish it. It looks better every time. It looks better, even if it's a one consistent, like, mediocre artist is better than a mix of two slightly above average artists, in my opinion. It's so jarring when you get that switch.
So it did bug me in this issue, and maybe you pointing it out all the time is getting me to notice it more.
Good. If I'm doing it, that I'll take that as I've done something good with this podcast. I have reached somebody.
Oh, man. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Doomsday Clock number 10. Cletus, this could have been a standalone issue. And it was awesome.
It was so good. I was shocked at how good this issue was. I know that's stupid because all of these issues have been pretty good. But, like, wow. This is the kind of issue that I feel like gets a lot of people to sort of forget all of their frustrations with the insane delays that we have had with this series.
I love getting this story from Dr. Manhattan's perspective. I loved how they did the time jumps, and it was just good. I love how you could have, on, like I said, this could have been a one shot and it still would have made sense without the rest of the story going on. You know what I mean? It basically took Dr. Manhattan from the end of the Watchmen series and put him into his, basically, you know, his first appearance in the regular DCU. And it was awesome to see his reactions, trying to figure things out. Oh, I can't see into the future, you know. Ozymandias attacking him with those tachyons. You know, he had to, we saw him struggling to see the future and then figure it out. He kind of latched on to somebody when he got there and used them as a focal point for being able to look into the future. And it was cool to see his perspective of how Superman has changed over DC's history and how they incorporated that in the story. You know, Superman appearing in the 1938, and then, oh, wait a minute, that's not what... It's changed. He appeared in the 80s and stuff like that. It was cool to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it was so fascinating, like, going through the history of DC Comics, basically, but as if you're actually living in that world as it's getting rewritten. It was just a spark of genius, really. It was really cool.
And the other thing, he talks about how others have been changing the multiverse and stuff. So he decided to do his own little experiment, which was take that Green Lantern lamp so Alan Scott wouldn't find it. And that's how the Justice Society disappeared. And then it talked about how the how this universe fought back against that. And, you know, that's why there was the New 52 and stuff like that. It was really interesting. The callback to the original Action Comics issue where Superman appears was awesome, too.
Yeah, I agree.
So I really enjoyed this, and I'm very excited for the next issue. I hope it doesn't take months and months to get to us.
I know. I mean, especially after an issue like this, where it's just like, oh wow, this was really good. Like, the rest of the comic has been pretty good, but this was the one where it sort of justified the existence of the comic. Where you're like, oh, okay, this is a really interesting angle. Now I'm really curious. You know what I mean? Because you could have had this pretty good story, but if it ultimately just ended up being Dr. Manhattan and Superman fighting for the sake of fighting, like, that's kind of dumb, right?
Right.
So the fact that it's this more like Dr. Manhattan kind of just like messing with the DC universe because he's curious and not intending necessarily for any negative consequences is fascinating.
Yeah. And then him realizing, oh, I've messed with it. Now I'm the villain, or I've become the villain.
Or I'm being viewed as the villain. Like, yeah. This universe senses I'm messing with it and is now framing me as a villain.
And this kind of ties back into what's been going on with the Justice League, too. Because Snyder's story has been about the DC universe being doom and how Superman brings hope to it, and the hope is fighting back. So I thought that was an interesting take, and I don't know if they've been working behind the scenes to kind of bring that together, or that's been the plan all along, or what's your thoughts?
I don't know. I there was definitely a post Doomsday Clock plan for DC, but then it took so long. Part of me wonders if they moved away from it and did something else. You know, it's hard for me to tell. I don't know. At one point, yes, for sure. There was definitely meant to be a coordinated, like, DC new status quo coming out of Doomsday Clock. And maybe there still will be slightly, but I kind of doubt it will be as much as it was originally intended to be because it's taken too long.
Yeah, it sure has. But I got to tell you, I'm really invested in the end of the story.
Yeah, me too. Well, I have to say, one thing both you and I have been pretty consistent on, although it has been insanely frustrating with the delays, and it does make it hard to remember what we read last time. This will read very well once it's collected into a book. Like, all of those complaints are going to go away once you're able to just read it as a whole story.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Heroes in Crisis number 9, the final issue. Did you find this disappointing?
Yeah, I surprisingly so. And it's weird because I don't think this is a bad issue.
It's not a bad issue, but it's disappointing. Only because ultimately nothing happens. Except for Wally giving himself up.
No, but all of those here. So what I'm a little bit shocked by is that so Wally is now in a terrible place and is in jail, rightfully so.
Right.
All of those other characters that died did die. The only one that they brought back was Ivy. So Arsenal's still dead. And all the other characters, which were minor characters that would never get used, but Arsenal's dead from this. I know they'll probably bring him back, but you know what I mean? Like, those are some major things, and I never totally felt, it doesn't feel like this story justified
their
those
deaths.
Major changes. Those are major, especially to Wally, especially with how they brought Wally back. And I know that that's sort of the point of the story, is that Wally gets brought back and there's too much pressure put on him. While his personal life is still incomplete and broken, and everybody's looking to him to be the symbol of hope, and he can't handle that. And I like that story, but it still, to me, doesn't justify. We now, at least for the time being, the DC Comics world is a world where Wally West is an unintentional murderer. You know what I mean? And I just don't think that story to me never justified that status quo. It tells a good story, and that was the thing I struggled with ultimately when thinking about this comic overall. I liked 90% of this comic, and I like ultimately the message that it's okay to ask for help. And if it doesn't seem like it's okay to ask for help, that's when things like this happen. I really like that. It's just, did you have to kill these characters? Did you have to change the status quo of that character to tell that story? I don't know. At the same time, I guess if you bring everybody back, then it cheapens the story. But you have time travel. Like, you inherently are using time travel, and you have Wally going through this sort of, you know, eternal punishment now, where one version of him will always be going through completing the time loop. So if you're going to do time travel, you're going to do Booster and Wally and using time travel, why not just have him fix it?
Yeah, that was one thing I didn't understand. Why didn't he fix it? He was already doing time travel. Now, I did mention something about he didn't want to create another flashpoint or something, but still.
Yeah, and I get that. I do appreciate that. I do have to say, I have to give King credit because he does write in an explanation for why Wally doesn't do that. And it does, I have to give him credit also. It does make sense. I believe that Wally wouldn't do it specifically because he doesn't want to recreate Flashpoint, because Flashpoint destroyed his life. So I get that. So I understand it, but it's still like, then don't introduce the possibility to do that then. I was surprised at how unsatisfied I was with the ending of this story. I was like, that's really it? I don't know.
It's not going to be it, though. Hey, I got some DC news for you. DC Comics has announced Flash Forward, a new 6-issue miniseries starring the best Flash, Wally West. Written by Scott Lobdell, featuring art by Brett Booth and Norm Rupmund. The series finds a speedster picking up his life after the Heroes in Crisis story.
That's not going to be a good series. I'm just going to, everybody's going to agree with me, but that guy's not a good writer.
Did I say it was a 6-issue miniseries?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's only going to be a miniseries, but I don't know this writer. What'd you say about
him? You do. You know him.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
What do you work on?
He is Scott Lobdell. He's done a ton of stuff. We've read him do some of the Red Hood stuff. I think he was on Titans for a while.
Oh, okay. I guess his name didn't stick out to me.
I get why they're getting into it, because I think he was the one, he was on Titans, the Wally West Titans team recently. I think he was writing it.
Oh, okay.
So I get why he would be the one doing it, but it's not going to be good. That comic is not going to magically fix the issues with this comic.
Okay, I can't argue with you on that.
People don't have to agree with me on that. I'm just telling you, for me personally, that I'm not looking to a Scott Lobdell comic to magically fix my issues with this story.
I was disappointed we didn't get more out of Booster and Blue Beetle.
Well, what I was a little surprised by was there wasn't really, almost half the comic is dedicated to more of those therapy sessions, which I really like those scenes. But if that, why not just do that as the comic then? If that's really what you're more interested in doing, and he wrote them really well, do that. Then, why did we need Wally to have, ultimately, the story that I think King really wanted to tell was the story of superhero trauma and all of them getting the help that they need. And I don't know why he didn't just write that. It felt like he threw the murder mystery in there to, get your interest. But ultimately, that is the part that made the comic unsatisfying. If it had almost been just, and it was a miniseries, if it had just been a continuous string of just little mini short stories of different heroes talking through their own issues. You know what I mean? Like some of the issues that we got were the caveman and a couple of those other guys, where it was just that was the comic, was just each of them telling their story and the issues that they were working through. I'd have read that miniseries. I know maybe not everybody would have, but I mean, that's kind of what, that kind of thing is what King's kind of known for, and so King fans are going to read that anyway. I don't know.
I feel like the murder mystery was the fatal flaw in this comic.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Superman, Leviathan Rising, Special Number 1. First thing I have to say, my favorite story out of this was the Jimmy Olsen story.
Yeah, it was. Is Bendis doing a Jimmy Olsen comic? He is, right? Am I making that up?
There is a Jimmy Olsen comic coming out. I don't know who's writing it though.
Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway from this. Was like, Bendis really wants to be writing a Jimmy Olsen comic.
And it's
that was the most inspired part of this.
And it was funny.
It was really funny, and I was frankly upset when it ended. I wanted more of it. Overall, the story was kind of interesting, but also confusing, because does Leviathan and Talia separately, do they realize that they accidentally captured Superman?
It almost
seemed unbelievable. At a certain point, it seemed unbelievable to me that they hadn't figured it out.
Okay, let me give you my opinion on that. Talia, I don't think she knew that was Superman. Leviathan, I had the feeling he knew that was Superman. But he didn't, you know, come out straight out and say it. He was kind of hinting around it.
But see, but then that doesn't... See, that's what I thought. I agree with you, because I got the opinion... I got the feeling that Talia would figure it out, which is a little surprising, frankly, for Talia. But that Leviathan did know, but then that doesn't fit the advice that he got, where it said, if you do trap Superman, you kill him. Even if apparently that's not really what he wanted. Apparently he didn't actually want Superman captured there. He did. He successfully had him. Kill him. Don't set him free. So that's why I'm not so sure that he did know.
Is Lex Luthor Leviathan?
No.
No. Okay. That was a... I was a little confused by that too.
Lex Luthor would not go to some other person secretly running Metropolis. If Lex Luthor found out somebody else was secretly running Metropolis, he would have shown up to kill that woman.
Then who was the face dude? Was that Leviathan? Okay. I guess I was confused.
I think Leviathan is somebody we know. Because they make a point later in the comic, I can't think of the woman's name, but she says that he had been using that facial whatever disguise because his face would be recognizable and he couldn't afford to have that. So I do think it is somebody we know.
Did you notice?
It's not Lex. It's definitely not Lex.
Okay. Well, maybe I thought that because the dude looked bald when he was heading in at first. Maybe that's
if
why
it's
I thought
Lex,
that
is Bendis giving a straight middle finger to what Scott Snyder's doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is a total F you. I don't care about the whole Justice League plan that you're doing. I'm doing my own story and you can suck it. There's no way around it. If Leviathan is Lex Luthor, that is Bendis just flipping the bird to Scott Snyder. And I don't think he's doing that. I also don't think this story makes sense if it's Lex Luthor. Everything that their conversation is about, they're basically really talking about Lex and how Lex's ego stops him ultimately from defeating Superman.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I got that. Okay. I'm curious who Leviathan is. I'm glad they're keeping it a mystery, and I'm glad it's somebody we know. There was little things in this comic that I thought were kind of cool. We got the Starro Justice League cover in it. I thought that was cool. Did you notice Lois Lane was wearing a Wonder Twins shirt at one point?
I did.
We also see the battle with Superman and Mongol that was in the Naomi comic. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, little things like that. I thought that was cool in this comic.
We got the Red Lantern cat.
Yes. Now, I thought that was an odd team up.
It didn't totally make sense. That was why I was upset that they cut the Jimmy part short, because I was like, but why? Why is that cat here? I knew immediately who it was. So I was like,
yeah,
why?
I did. I knew who it was too, and I was very curious about it. I loved the Jimmy Olsen story. It was freaking awesome. One Wild Night in Gorilla City.
My two complaints with this comic were, A, the first art, the artwork jump for Jimmy makes sense.
Yes.
It jives entirely with what it's going. It's almost presenting itself as a different comic. The artwork switch to Lois, though, I did not like. I thought that was a very jarring switch mid-scene. Mid-scene, all of a sudden, it just switches art, and I was like, what the hell? That I did not like. But then I can't help but feel like Leviathan had Superman in his grasp and either didn't realize it or intentionally let him go. And that's ultimately going to be what foils his plan. And I hate that. I hate that. For me personally, I hate stories where villains screw themselves in the dumbest way. I don't like that kind of story. I like story where the villain has a genius plan and is foiled because the hero is smarter, not because the villain has a genius plan and just inexplicably becomes an idiot for 5 minutes.
I agree with you there.
So I could be wrong. I hope that I am wrong, but I got this sinking feeling as I was reading it. I was like, this is where he had him. He had Superman and he let him go. Is that going to be ultimately what dooms him? Because if that is, that's stupid.
Now, the capturing of Clark Kent was Talia's idea, wasn't it? Because I got the...
Yes, it was Talia's idea to capture Clark Kent. But like the I cannot think of what that woman's name was. The boss woman says, if you capture him, you don't talk to him or do anything else. You just kill him. That's all you do. If you catch him, you kill him. Like the comic explicitly states that they capture Superman. And if Leviathan does indeed know who Clark Kent is, he should have killed him. So the implication is that they either truly did not know, not just Talia, but Leviathan as a whole truly didn't know that they had just captured Superman, which is a little unbelievable to me, or they did know and he willingly let him go for some other part of his plan, which again also doesn't make sense.
It's not specifically stated. I had the feeling that Leviathan knew, but maybe he didn't. I'm looking back at a page now where Talia and Leviathan are talking, and he goes, I'd blame your father for the number he did on you, but you're a grown woman. Why on earth would you antagonize the alien in the middle of our event, Talia? Why would you lie to these loyal members of our cause and tell them to kidnap this journalist? Why did you do this? And then she's like, you stole Leviathan out from under me. Oh, this was a coup? Wow. You wanted the alien to put it all down. Oh, okay. I offered you partnership. I offered you an opportunity to rise up above your upbringing. I told you if you're fighting the alien, then you are on the wrong side. You took that to mean I was scared. So I'm wondering, maybe he doesn't know that Clark is Superman.
But like, how? How would he know how to take down all of the secret agencies in the world, some of which have to know that Clark Kent is Superman, and not know that Clark Kent is Superman? Amanda Waller knows that Clark Kent is Superman. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Also, I'm pretty sure the woman, the boss, I apologize to our viewers, I can't remember her name, but the boss, I'm pretty sure she does know that Clark is Superman.
I was
right. Aren't we?
I don't know. I was unclear of that also.
I thought her and Red Cloud had kind of figured out that he was Superman.
I don't remember Red Cloud knowing. But I mean, it's possible that the boss lady knows, but I don't remember it ever being stated. I am unsure. I never got the inkling that Ms. Good knew who Clark was. I mean, she might, because it's always been the way they've always done it's been iffy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, man, I can't remember her name either. That villain's Leon.
Sure.
L-E-O-N-E, Leone. That's what the dude calls her, the face dude. Okay. I'm invested in this story right now, and I definitely want to see more Jimmy Olsen stuff. That's for sure.
Yeah, that my biggest takeaway from this comic, which was probably not what was intended, was that wow, I really want to read that Jimmy Olsen comic.
Jimmy's supposed to be getting his own comic. Lois is supposed to be getting her own comic. And I saw an article saying that Bendis is bringing back the Super Family. We're going to be getting some crossover between Superman, Supergirl, and I saw Superboy in there too. So Bendis isn't getting rid of Superboy. It looks like he's trying to bring back the Super Family. But I don't think it's going to be exactly what we're used to. That's my take on it. One of the other things we saw in this episode was Supergirl. Apparently she's back from her mission. I need to get caught up on the Supergirl comic just to find out what's going on with her, because these stories, her story is tying back in with Superman's. So
I feel like we must have missed the conclusion to that arc, which is insane to me that they wrapped it up.
I have the issues, I just haven't read them yet.
Don't you get that feeling though? I feel like they must have wrapped it up, which I legitimately can't believe.
Yeah,
it was not on track to finish up anytime soon.
No, that's one reason why we stopped reviewing it. Because they're going for the long haul, and we were getting bored. But this Leviathan event's going to be going on for most of the year, it looks like. So we'll have to keep our eye on it. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk some Swamp Thing.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. Stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com. We all smoke down here, Georgie.
And we're back. Let's talk Swamp Thing, Season 1, Episode 2, Worlds Apart.
So, this second episode, I don't know about you, but for me, really, I think, starts to pick up the more about what the overall show is going to end up being about. Understandably, a lot of the pilot was a lot of setup, but this, I really felt like the ball got rolling more. We got a better idea of what some of the characters' roles were going to be. So one big development in this show is that the girl that, like, the very first girl that gets hospitalized wakes up right at the same time that Alec realizes that he's Swamp Thing, and they do this really cool scene where he's sort of like pulling at his arm, like the leaves on his arms, and she's pulling out the like tubes on her arms. It was really cool how they sort of like mirrored their movements, yet each reacting to their own situation. I thought that was fascinating. The second thing that went with that though is then there seems to be some sort of psychic connection or ability to understand themselves between, because she then talks and says that he's scared, that he doesn't understand what he is, and then later at the end of the show, again, he is not yet shown the ability to talk, and yet she has understood what he was saying. So that's going to be really interesting. I'm definitely excited to see more with that between those two characters.
Yeah, I found that really interesting too. And I like the fact that she felt called to go find him. We got the scene with the bad guys that were out in a swamp when she stowed away on that boat, and that dude comes aboard there and kills him. That's kind of gruesome for her to see. What was really gruesome and I was not expecting was when Swamp Thing ripped the dude apart.
Oh man, that was like Mortal Kombat. It was like a fatality in Mortal Kombat.
Oh, I was very curious. Did your girlfriend watch episode 2 with you?
No, unfortunately. I wanted to watch it with her, but the way our schedules worked out, I wasn't able to watch this one. I was that scene specifically, I was like, oh, come on.
I was not expecting that. I was like, dang God.
It was, yeah, that was crazy. That was a crazy scene.
I also liked how this episode focused on Abby Arcane, and we got a lot of the show was from her perspective and her investigating of the show, and I kind of like that.
I kind of think that's how it's going to be too. I feel like she's going to be effectively the main character.
That's what it felt like to me.
Which makes sense. Like, I don't necessarily think that that's the wrong choice, because I think it serves the show better. Like, how do you make Swamp Thing the main character?
Yeah, that's kind of a hard thing to do. And I like the fact that we didn't get a whole lot of Swamp Thing, but when we did, it was important to the story. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it makes more sense, because we don't want to be hanging out in the swamp watching him try to watch what's going on in the town from the swamp. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be interacting with that many characters, so it makes a lot more sense for Abby to be more of the main character. And I really like that in this episode.
So the second kind of major story that we got in this episode was... Oh, shoot. What the mom... I'm terrible with some of these characters' names.
I can't remember her name either.
Anyway, but the business owner's wife, who was also the mom to the daughter that Abby was friends with, goes to visit Madame Xanadu because she still apparently can't get, or she thought she had gotten over her daughter's death, but Abby returning to the town has sort of resurfaced those feelings. That was a pretty cool scene. We'd already seen that Xanadu was in the show last episode, but it was really cool getting her. It looks like she's going to actually feature in the show at least a little bit as a minor character, which is cool.
That is cool. I really like the actress that's playing the mother, because I think she's doing a great job of acting the character. Yeah,
I agree with you. She's been great. And I'm really interested. That was definitely the smallest storyline that we had in this episode, but it feels like it's one that's going to grow significantly in importance, because that is we've got the plague storyline that's sort of the A storyline right now, and then the B plot is sort of like the kind of investigation of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, part of it is the plague itself, and then it's the B plot is sort of like the actual events that are causing that plague is the second storyline. And then the C storyline is this woman and her dealing with the death of her daughter. But that's the magic one. So yeah. We've kind of got science, and then we've got the swamp, and then we've got magic. And you know, Swamp Thing, that magic storyline is going to start to become more and more important.
Yeah. Yep. So really intriguing. And I can't believe the show got canceled.
I know. I mean... Again, I like the pilot. The show's still not as good as Doom Patrol, but this episode was for me personally a big improvement. I was like, oh, I really like. I was much more invested in the show after this episode.
It's not any worse than Titans, in my opinion.
No, I arguably maybe a better first two episodes. I think, for me personally. It's close. They're definitely close.
Yeah. So, as far as I'm concerned, DC Universe is doing a great job.
Yeah. I would love to find out what the story is eventually, why this is canceled. I mean, maybe, unless for some reason the show just gets terrible out of nowhere, I'd be pretty surprised.
I'd be surprised too. It's the first two are really great. So...
The cast is also kind of too good, right? Like, it feels like the cast is too good for it to be that bad.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the acting in it's great, so I really haven't had any complaints about it. I mean, even the actress that's playing the little girl, she's doing a great job.
She's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, Cletus. I really hope we find out more what's going on behind the scenes. And I'm really hoping that maybe DC will, or not, or Warner Brothers, or whoever's behind the axing of the show will be like, oh, maybe we screwed up. Let's bring the show back.
I hope. Well, my biggest concern following this episode is that I feel like the show is going to end setting up a more classic Swamp Thing villain, and we're never going to actually get it. And that is so frustrating.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think, especially after this one, it seems pretty clear to me that the villain is the businessman.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean,
but I don't basically think he's not supposed to be Arcane, who is the Swamp Thing villain. But there's something weird going on with the mom. And so what are they going to do with that? And you know, so it's like, I think season one will end with the businessman's demise, which seems right. But then I feel like that is then going to set up something more familiar to Swamp Thing fans. And it's going to be kind of disappointing because they're never going to actually tell that story.
Yeah. I am a little worried how this season's going to end. They're going to leave us hanging. I got that feeling.
I feel like it's going to be like, they're not the same show at all, but when Green Lantern, the animated series, got canceled, it was canceled ahead of time also. So people knew. And so I watched the finale knowing that it was the series finale, but that it was meant to be a season finale. And luckily it does have a decent sense of finality to it, but it doesn't totally. You can definitely see the storylines that they never got a chance to tell. That show never gets to do Sinestro. They introduce Green Lantern Sinestro, and they clearly strongly hint that he is on the verge of a fall, and he's going to be, and throughout the whole season they hint at this yellow energy, and they never come out and do anything with it because that was clearly meant to be season two, and they never did it. And so that was always deeply frustrating to me watching that show, because A, that show was really good, but they were also laying the foundation for something to do in the future seasons, and they never got to do it. And I feel like this show's doing the same thing. I feel like some of the magic stuff that we're seeing, because it is that sort of C storyline, is stuff that's going to be a mounting threat that is then exposed as an intent to be a future threat that we never actually get resolved.
Yeah, it's just disappointing. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so one of the characters that gets introduced in this episode of Swamp Thing, I don't know if you caught this or not, was Dr. Woodrue, who is Floronic Man. I was surprised initially because I was like, hey, I'm pretty sure that's a character. And I looked it up, and it was Floronic Man. I was like, oh, yeah. Wait, is he a Swamp Thing character? And I looked it up, and in fact, he is.
He is a Swamp Thing character. I didn't know that. I've seen him in other comics I've read before.
Not as the original comic that he is from, but he has then since been incorporated, understandably, into Swamp Thing stuff. So his first Swamp Thing appearance is during Alan Moore's run, actually, in Saga of the Swamp Thing number 21, which Jason Woodrue is introduced in that. And I'm curious if that's the version that they're going with, or if they're going to be going with, like, the one that we saw. I remember in that animated Batman Harley Quinn, Floronic Man was the villain in that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was, wasn't he? Forgot about that.
Yeah. He's having a heyday, man. What a weird character to suddenly get two different, you know, animated and live-action adaptations.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Floronic Man. If you're curious to see him in Swamp Thing, Saga of the Swamp Thing number 21 is his first Swamp Thing appearance.
All right, and my shout out is going to Rob Liefeld. Can't stand the dude. Okay, Rob Liefeld, I'm going to give you what I call the double tilly. That's two middle fingers at you.
Oh man, I can't believe you read about this. That's so funny.
I can't stand the dude. I couldn't stand him back in the 90s when he was an artist. Still can't stand him today, especially after his tweeting. I think it's freaking hilarious that he had to quit Twitter.
So to clue in our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, Rob Liefeld tweeted out, seemingly at random, that DC Comics was going down the drain, and to which a lot of people then were like, that's hilarious coming from you of all people, which I personally agree with. Regardless of your opinion on the dude, it was such a weird thing to tweet out. And because then he started defending it like, but I'm working for, why would I have something against DC? I work for them. Then why tweet that out? I was just, what a dummy.
Oh, man. I had, when you mentioned him on the show, I don't know if it was last show or the show before, I bit my tongue. And I know I've said it before when you've mentioned him on the show. We don't say that name on this show.
He is, in my opinion, the worst major artist in comics.
Amen, brother.
Good for him. He has made way more money than I will ever make in my life. So he can lord that over me any day, and it will be true. So good for him. But I don't know how, because it's not good.
I don't know, dude. I've never liked his stuff. Never have. All right. Well, that's my shout out for this week. All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, and coming up next week, we'll be talking Adventures of the Super Sons, Batman, Justice League, Shazam, The Green Lantern, Young Justice, and of course, Swamp Thing Season 1, Episode 3. And we'll be having a special guest join us next week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
Has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.